You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, it's Tuesday, the 16th of April, 2024. This is TNT Radio Vision, TNT, period. Today's News Talk. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and whatever you're doing, I hope it's nice and, of course, legal. Welcome to the show today. We've got 2 hours of absolute magic for you people out there. Of course, I'm going to say that. What else am I going to say? The show's going to suck today. Go and do something else because it's going to blow hard. No, never blows hard here. We deliver. We deliver in spades. And who have we got on the show today? Well, we've got Mats Nilsson beaming in from Sweden. We're going to be talking about some of the conflicts that are going on in Europe at this point in time, both in terms of war and political conflicts that are raging in Europe. Basil Valentine will be joining me at the end of this first hour. We're going to be chewing the fat over some of the political and other issues that are happening in the UK. In the second hour, I'm actually really excited about this one. I'm going to be joined by a chap called Jack Broderick. And Jack is a chief spokesperson for the AfriForum in South Africa. He is a community safety specialist and a close protection officer. And we're going to be talking about, let's just say, life on the edge, living on the edge, as Aerosmith once sang, down in South Africa. And if that wasn't enough, Ben Pyle is also going to be joining me at the end of the second hour. We're going to be talking about, as he calls it, the green blob. The green blob. Yes, there's a big green blob and it wants to envelop us, destroy us with our its climate change shenanigans, skullduggery and nonsense. We're going to be talking. He's an expert in all these sort of things and somebody who I very much enjoy talking to. He's going to be joining me at the end of the second hour. And of course, both hours, we're going to have Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent, talking about the breaking news of the day. If you want, you can log into our live chat, tntradio.live. Leave us a message, thought, comment, opinion, meme, gif, link, whatever you like. Just leave it in there and I will do my level best to look at it and maybe even respond to it before the end of the show. You know, what a day. Yesterday was crazy. At one point it was snowing here. The sky was black. Then it went blue. Then it went gray. Then it was raining. Then there was hailstones. Then there was sunlight. Then it was freezing. Then it wasn't. What a day yesterday. And apparently it was like that in many, many areas of the UK. Today is a different story. It is glorious. It's beautiful blue skies, a lovely breeze coming in. It's a proper spring day. So I got out this morning and I tried to make the best of it. I encourage you people to do the same thing. I went out for a walk. I had my headphones in, as I do, listening to some banging tunes. And I was looking at the beauty around me. And then I thought, you know what? Hang on a minute. And I took the headphones out and I listened to the soundtrack of nature and creation itself. And I don't care what you're listening to. If you're into your rock, your metal, your bluegrass, hillbilly music, folk music, traditional music, symphony orchestras, there is no soundtrack greater than the soundtrack of nature. You listen to waves crashing on the beach. You listen to the wind blowing through the trees. You listen to those birds chirping in the morning time, waking you up maybe at some unholy hour. There's nothing to substitute for it. So wherever possible, and again, we're advocates here for mental health, or at least I'm trying to be, detach a little bit, get out there and literally smell the roses as they're starting to come into bloom here in the springtime, allegedly, for maybe 1 or 2 days anyway. So make the best of it, detach where you can, but don't detach from TNT, because if you do, then how the hell are you going to find out what's happening in the world and get your daily dose of magic and entertainment here? So please make sure you stay tuned. Gemma Cooper's on her way in. We'll be right back here on TNT, today's news talk.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma, yesterday you were a little bit fragile. We were bemoaning our lack of vitamin D, natural vitamin D from the sunshine. There wasn't any of it to be found. I went out this morning and I got myself a right old dose of it. And I plan on getting some more when the show's over. What do you reckon? Are you feeling a little bit better today?
I'm feeling better enough. Let's put it that way. Better enough, still not quite right, but better enough to be on with you, Rick. And I completely endorse what you're saying. And funnily enough, mental health, there's a story I'm bringing to the table from Ireland, actually, with regard to mental health, especially amongst young people. It's never been more important to disconnect, I think, in the crazy times we live in, and just take stock of what's right in front of you, the present moment, because that's where all your life happens. It happens in the moment. It doesn't happen in the past, doesn't happen in the future. It happens in the now. Most of us are completely disconnected from the now and look at the knock-on effect in terms of mental health. So you've done a good thing this morning, Rick. You've done a good thing, you know, especially turning off the headphones. Be present. Oh, yeah. Be present.
Totally. And that's the thing. Sometimes I'm guilty of saying, you know, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. And I had a guest on last week, an ex-Royal Marine Commando who's turned his whole life around from addiction and homelessness. He said, yeah, the best may yet to come, but don't forget the present, because tomorrow's gone. Yesterday's gone, tomorrow's not certain. All you've got is the present. So while you can be busy scratching your head or rubbing your chin going, the best is yet to come, you can be forgetting about today and making the best of today. And of course, we're called what? Today's News Talk. So there's another plug, shameless one for TNT. It's all about today, isn't it?
That's all we've got. Today. And in fact, I'll just go one more thing on this. People often think about time, you know, it's going to be, oh, later on in time, or, you know, but actually, if you look at what a clock is, those people who still have a traditional clock and not a digital phone or screen, whatever, if you look at the hands going round, tick tock, tick tock, they're not going anywhere. They're just going around in the present moment. It's just a device with mechanisms that go around in the present moment. You know, there's a whole thing about time. It doesn't really exist. It's only the moment, you know, continually changing. That's I know it's a bit kind of way, but you know, it's a thing. It's a philosophy. It's a school of thought. Present moment's all we got. Today's all we've got.
And remember, too, even a broken clock tells the time correctly twice a day. So there's another little one to ponder on as we meander through today's news story. So what's breaking today? What have you got for us today, Gemma?
Well, I'll get to that mental health story in Ireland in just a second. But of course, the really big story at the moment doing the rounds in the UK is the tobacco and vaping bill, which is going to be debated in the House of Commons for the first time and voted on by MPs for the first time. And lots of different comments now coming out this morning in reaction to this bill. Backbench MP, not backbench, some Tory MPs have said they'll vote against it. It'll still go through because Labour and the Lib Dems are pushing this controversial bill to stop anyone who's born after the 1st of January 2009 from ever being able to buy a tobacco product when they reach a legal age. So many commentators this morning, one senior former cabinet minister actually said this is a ridiculous bill and all it's going to do is make smoking look even more cool. It's going to push it underground and create a huge black market, which is what many have been saying. Many people in the Conservative Party talking about the profoundly unconservative values of like telling people what to put in their bodies, which is a huge contrast to the last 4 years, but there we go. So that's still the headline really dominating. Also, Home Office staff in the UK, this story emerged late yesterday, but certainly one to look at. It's emerged just how many are under investigation for criminal offences, including fraud, theft, bullying, harassment, abuse of power, corruption. And this is government staff paid for by the taxpayer. The disclosures have come out at a time that couldn't be worse for the Home Office. It's already under scrutiny for its controversial bills, including the Rwanda bill, which is expected to go into law this week. It's just gone back to the House of Lords today. The Commons has pushed it back there. And also this study into mental health. I mean, we're always hearing how bad things are in the Republic of Ireland. Well, today this landmark report has come out, which absolutely proves it. The National Youth Council of Ireland has released a report showing half of Ireland's young people have really incredibly low levels of well-being. One in five as well say they routinely skip meals. They can't keep up with the rising cost of living. Housing is the main concern. They just feel they will never, ever get a property of their own. And money worries. So the report is recommending that the government tackle the increasing housing crisis in the Republic with more rent caps and more affordable housing to enable young people to get on the housing ladder and move out of home. But other worries were in there as well. Concerns about the future, concerns about war, and also concerns about social media, which they say makes them anxious too. So not a great picture for the young people of Ireland, which is a shame because when you think of young people in Ireland, you think of spark and fight and personality and the crack. Not so, according to this report. They say it's definite cause for concern for the government, who need to act now. It's the next generation.
You know, listening to that list of woes and things that are causing people concern, housing, this whole business about home ownership, getting on the property ladder, you know, get that idea clean out of your head. What I mean by that is it's not a given that you're going to own a home. And even if you do get a property, you have to take out most of the time what's called a mortgage, which means death pledge. Okay, so you need to start scrimping and saving a big deposit. And then probably nowadays, mortgages back in the day, it was 20, 25 years. You put down a 5% deposit. And by the time you were in your probably early 50s, you would own your home outright. Now, they're talking about 30, 35-year mortgages, intergenerational mortgages, 10 to 15% deposits, sometimes 25% deposits, massive financial pressure. And back to what we started off talking about, living in the present. Listen, if you have a roof over your head this morning, whoever you are, wherever you are, and whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice under that roof of yours, you're pretty well off, okay? If you've just got out of a bed, you're pretty well off. If you've got electric that works, a toilet to sit on, to do your business, and that you can flush afterwards, some food in the fridge, clothes in your back, maybe got a job to go to, you're doing pretty well. So I think we also need to have a little bit of a reality check here. And I'm tired, I'm not going to lie, I'm tired of seeing videos from, I don't know why, but it's Canadians a lot at the minute. They're crying in their cars, crying, oh, the price of 15 chicken breasts is gone through the roof. Well, don't buy 15 chicken breasts then, you know, live day to day, or grow your own bloody chickens, or breed them, or do what you want to do, slaughter them, pluck the hairs from them and chuck them in the pot yourself. It's a hell of a lot cheaper. That's what they call Africa style. That's what they do in Africa. And if you don't like the price of crops, grow your own bloody crops as well. So I get where a lot of people are coming from. But Gemma, there's this mollycoddled entitlement that's running around this generation now. People need a good financial slap up the side of the head, and they need to get a reality check. You know, it's not the Waltons we're living in here. This is more like the Munsters or the Adams family. You're not living on Walton Mountain anymore. So people need to get a grip and stop whining about not being able to afford to buy a house. Deal with it. Thank God you're not living in a mud hut. That's what I say. What do you reckon?
Maybe you should have authored this report, or the authors of this report should have, the National Youth Council of Ireland should have come to you for comment and analysis before publishing the report today. I mean, there is something to be said for that. But of course, you know, Ireland is often also, as we've seen in the headlines with it's a very long town name, isn't it? The yes. Newton Kennedy, the one with the immigration arson attack. Yesterday yes. is that Ireland is facing an immigration crisis with nowhere to put the asylum seekers at the same time when there's not enough property for Irish young people. So I think in terms of stability, there is an argument to be made, not necessarily for home ownership, but for at least a rent cap. Some people can move out of home and have a low cost rent to enable them at least to get on some kind of footing as an adult. Otherwise, you're living with your mum and dad for the rest of your life. And that's not good either. You know, so there is a balance to be
had
here.
Whenever people talk about this business, living with mum and dad, it's like, it's so hard for you to live with mum and dad. Imagine how it must be for mum and dad. They were probably exactly. hoping and praying to get rid of your sorry ass out of the house by the time you're 18, and you're still there at 30 and 40 and 50 and 60. And mum and dad are in their 80s going, they're still in the bloody house again. Have a thought for mum and dad and all this, instead of bemoaning the fact that you're living with them. How about the fact that they have to live with your sorry, miserable, moaning ass into your 30s, 40s, and 50s as well? You see, you can flip everything around, can't you? I'm feeling a little bit this morning, quite frankly, because you know what? We've lost sight of what we need in this life. We need food and clothes and a roof over our head and a little bit of heat. Anything else on top of that, Gemma, is gravy, is a Brucey bonus, as they used to say in The Price is Right, or whatever that weird card game that Bruce Forsyth used to do in the UK. But anyway, I'm off on one, Gemma. I don't know if I'm going to be able to be reined back in this morning.
Well, I'll see you in an hour and we'll see how we get on, shall we?
Is that it already? Holy frag. Sorry about that. I sabotage. And listen, I'm not taking away from the fact I know there's a housing crisis. I know we're being flooded. But what I'm trying to say is, this whole business, I mean, I'm trying to put my own life into perspective at the minute, okay? So as bad as I have it, I'm trying to say, well, at least I don't have this to deal with. At least I don't have that. Yes, I have my woes and I have my problems. Believe you me, I have my issues mentally, physically, and spiritually like everybody else. But I'm trying to make the best of what I have and appreciate what I do have rather than focus on the things that I don't which is what I kind of shine a light on for the entire duration of the 2 hours that I'm on here in TNT anyway. So I'm trying to do the old balance, you know, the old yin and yang, the old yin and yang. But anyway, it's all good. And thanks for bringing that story to us. We'll maybe talk about the vaping tobacco one later on in the second hour, if we can. That's an interesting one there. It's a very interesting one. So Gemma, thanks very much for your input as always. Leave your thoughts, comments, and questions and opinions in the live chat. And I'll be back after this short break with Mats Nielsen joining me from Sweden. So don't go away. We'll be right back on TNT, today's news talk.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
And I got this one thing and I thought, oh, it's because I'm a woman. No, there was a bloke came behind me with one thing and they went, please, go ahead of us. And I said, fellas, this is fabulous. I just don't see people do this anymore. And they weren't British. I said, where are you from? And one of them said, we're from Albania. He said, we're not criminals. We're just people, we work. But people say such bad things about us. Please, we're not bad. And I said, well, listen, I don't look at you and think you're a criminal because your accent. I said, do I look like a criminal? They went, no. I went, well, I am convicted. And I said, by most of the criminals in their uniforms working for the government, the tyrannical government.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
Yes, this is TNT, today's News Talk. Boy, are we talking about just about everything today, maybe except for the news. And you know what? Sometimes you just want to be fast and loose, cut it fast and loose. And my next guest is joining me from Sweden, Mats Nielsen. And I'm not going to lie, I was looking up some of his work last night and I searched Mats Nielsen Sweden. And this picture came up of this bearded man in a death metal band called Brotherhood of Metal. And he's a dead ringer. He's a dead ringer for Mats, and I was asking him, is that you? And he said, no, and I name-checked a few bands from Sweden, one I used to, well, still do love listening to, called Entombed. And then the studio guys listened in, and they said, oh, I've never heard of Swedish death metal before. Mats, Entombed, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Oh, good man yourself. Clandestine, they released an album back in, I think it was 1992. Called Clandestine, absolutely epic album. Lars Goran Petrov, Nicky Anderson, Thomas Skogsberg, Alex Hellid. What a hellacious lineup they were. And yeah, I just thought I would throw that out there. It's a good way to start the show this morning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's as good as any way to start a show. And I love the fact that you were discussing the concept of time, which is basically just the sun moving, setting and rising. Mm-hmm. And it's a construct. So we'll just be in the present and try to deconstruct the madness of the world within the constraints of the concept of time, as you so rightly discussed before me coming on.
And also, here's a little tie-in for you as well. You talk about time, construct, and sunlight, the sun rising and falling. On a strange trivia note, Entombed recorded that legendary album in a place called Sunlight Studios in Stockholm with legendary producer Thomas Skogsberg. So most of the great Euro death metal came out of a studio called Sunlight Studios in Stockholm in Sweden. So there you go. I don't know if you knew that or not.
We made the connection. Could be on the Bugle next.
It could be, but listen, let's recalibrate ourselves here and have a little look about what's going on in our neck of the woods at the minute. A post that you put up yesterday on your Twitter account, and you can follow Mats at Matze, M-A-Z-Z-E, Nielsen, N-I-L-S-S-O-N, War as a Media Strategy. Okay, so this was in relation to a post from Zero Hedge. Netanyahu has asked the Israeli Defense Forces to provide target options that would send a message but not cause casualties. This is obviously following on from the Iranian drone strikes and the Israeli strike on the embassy in Damascus. Options include potential strike on a facility in Tehran or a cyber attack. And you've simply commentated war as a media strategy. I think we've avoided cyber attacks as a war strategy up until this point. Could this maybe, this conflict in the Middle East, be the beginning of the weaponization of the internet or the cutting of the internet?
Well, I think if it's going to be done, it's going to be done by Israel, because they have done so before. If you remember a few years back, there was this worm that was entombed into the Iranian nuclear project system. I can't for the life of me remember the name of that virus or worm now, but that was, I think they found out that that was Israel who planted it there. So if it's an easy way of regaining what can be conceived as an upper hand for Israel after they were so obviously penetrated, or their security was penetrated by the Iranian attack. So I'm guessing that Israel didn't really expect Iran to respond to it in the way that they did, but they responded to it, and they did it by achieving some sort of balance by telling the Turkish representatives that they were going to attack, and then the Turkish representatives send the word to Israel and America, I suppose. So that's what I mean by it's a managed retaliation on a retaliation situation. Now, the problem is how to end it. An eye for an eye makes the world blind. How do they decide, if they're not talking to each other, how do they decide when enough is enough? And that's why I'm thinking Israel might be contemplating a electronic kind of warfare strike that's going to guarantee that no civilian casualties will be suffered. And after that, you can do a de-escalatory shenanigan of sorts within the diplomatic sphere, and it might fizzle out. But we're still teetering on the brink of this going further. So we'll see. The next couple of days, we'll know. But right now, everything is, like I always say, everything is just educated guesses and speculation.
Based on your observation of what's happening since October, 6 months plus now, this has been going on and has been escalating consistently for the last 6 months. The death toll is growing. The humanitarian crisis is growing. Now Iran are on the brink of entering in here fully fledged. Do you think, just taking this up to our little news break in a couple of minutes' time, do you think that Israel might be looking for a little bit of a walk back at this point, given that a lot of narratives are now not just quite so supportive of what they're doing in Gaza at this point in time, and in Rafah, also what they're talking about, the ground invasion on there. I'm not saying that the tide has turned against them in terms of, the like of America and Europe, and, a lot of people are still pledging support, but there are little caveats appearing now and then, say, you might want to reconsider doing this, you might want to stop, killing the innocent civilians. Do you think maybe they've stepped back, reassessed things, and they're looking for a little walk back and still saving a little bit of face at this time?
Yes, I do. And I think the reason why I think this is, as you describe it, what will happen is that the powers that be, and by that I mean the financialized capitalism that runs part of the, or all of the Western world, they don't particularly enjoy full-blown regional or global wars. They like the slow fizzle because that's where they can make their gains and that's where they can make their profits. So Israel is a money-making machine for certain companies and governments. But if Israel were to come head-to-head against Hezbollah and Hamas and the Iranian government and Syria, that means that you would be looking at monetary or economic downturn within Israel. And also many of the Israeli armaments companies would probably be nationalized in order to be able to control what you produce, because then it would suddenly be a war for survival. Mm-hmm. So the forces that are controlling and running certain governments probably will be telling the president of the United States to make it clear to Netanyahu that he doesn't have full support if he's heading towards a military escalatory policy. And that's why I think Netanyahu is looking for a face-saving way to get out of the situation. So yes, I agree with you. Israel has taken on too many burdens right now, and they haven't really calculated with being in a situation like they are right now, and they're trying to get out of it as best they can.
Mm-hmm. Whilst retaining some face saving, because of course they don't want to look like they've backed off here,
yes.
Even though they will be backing off, de-escalating, but they'll try and put a spin on it to say, we're still in control here, this was our decision, we weren't influenced by outside sources. But of course, that's very much what is actually happening at the minute. We've got to take a little headline break. When we come back at the other side, Mats, let's look at the cost of war, because as you rightly pointed out, a slow burn is infinitely preferable to a hot explosion, no pun intended, when it comes to war, because of course there's a lot of money to be made off of the back of this. And what else effects can be felt by the like of you and I, you up in Sweden, me over here in Ireland? Because the war kicks off in the Middle East doesn't mean that you and I will not be seriously impacted on a financial basis, because these ripples spread far and wide across the world. So let's look at the implications of this going really hot when we come back at the other side here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Hey guys, great news!
News Radio.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Elon Musk criticized the New York hush money trial against former President Donald Trump as a corruption of the law and an instance of lawfare. He shared his views on X in response to comments by former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, who argued that the trial was divisive for the country. During a stabbing spree at Westfield Shopping Mall in Bondi Junction, Sydney on April 13th, a mentally ill assailant, 40-year-old Joel Cauchy from Queensland, targeted and killed 5 women and 1 man.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, so just looking at the cost of war here with Mats Nielsen, and you know, there's an old song, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Well, that's not quite true. It's very, very good for profit margins when it comes to arms dealers and governments that are buying and supplying and selling and distributing weaponry. There's no shortage of money when it comes to that. You want to feed the poor. You want to put homeless people with a roof over their head. There's no money, but you want to defend yourself against drone attacks. $1 billion magicked up from nowhere. So that's the estimated cost. When this drone strike happened last week against Israel, their defense against Iran's overnight attack likely cost over $1 billion just for one night's defense. You know, cost of living, austerity, you know, people are getting it tight at the minute. No shortage of money when it comes to whipping up an Iron Dome defense grid overnight, or a long war, billions upon billions being pumped into Ukraine, for example, money being sent. The Sudan have been told they've been pledged €1 billion by European governments overnight to help them out with all the shenanigans that's going on in Africa. War? It's a bottomless pit when it comes to money, and there seems to be no shortage of wheelbarrows being dumped into that pit.
It's just as you say, and I've been looking into this for many years now. It's always a follow the money kind of situation. The armament industry today is the guardian of financialized Western capitalism, and it's the old European idea of capitalism. You know, the idea of full employment, consumption, continuous, endless growth is dead and buried. So now it's the European objective is now to be a vassal state to NATO or to the US empire and try to maintain a military industrial hegemony as kind of like to protect Europe from succumbing to the mass of debt that it's already in. So I saw the Estonian prime minister, for example, say that the EU needed to issue 100 euros of euro bonds in order to relaunch the European Union's military industry. That's basically what they did during the coronavirus shenanigans 2-3 years ago. So now it's the media is once again packaging a new emergency in order for a last ditch European effort to keep the economy going. And right now, the crisis capitalism theory is that this money needs to be pumped into the military industrial complex. Previously, it was the pharmaceutical industrial complex that got the money. Do we, the citizens, ever get the money? Of course not. Don't be silly. We don't repay this money to the politicians. We do something else with it, perhaps buy a good bottle of whiskey. And that's not going to help the politicians or the company profit line. So I think we're in a collapse mode, and this is the fiscal bulwark is burning down, and the military industrial complex within the European Union is a last attempt before we might end up in a kind of apocalyptic implosion, which means a war in order to reset the capitalist system. And in Great Britain, I saw that the head of the British Army was proposing a massive recruitment of citizens in order to be able to, you know, revitalize the British Empire. And this is also just in order to keep the military industry going. And it's economic opportunism for the wealthy and for the 1% who has the ownership. It's just classic. We could have been back to 1913 again. Nothing much has changed these years.
And you have to wonder, Mats, how much money is set aside every year to invest in diplomacy, for example? Okay, how much money is there to push diplomacy? I would say the budget for diplomacy is exactly $0, 0 euro, 0 pounds, zero whatever currency there is. And just, I brought up this story because I touched on it briefly here. Now, this just happened, yesterday? Okay, so many people aren't even aware this conflict is even going on. So yesterday, delegates attended the International Conference on Sudan in Paris. So yesterday there was a conference on Sudan in Paris. So what, you might be thinking? Well, it marks exactly a year after the war broke out between Sudan's army and paramilitary rapid support forces in the northeastern African country, leading it to a humanitarian crisis. And again, people are probably scratching their heads going, well, so what? What's that got to do with me? I don't even know where Sudan is. What are you talking to me about this for? Because I'll tell you why. International donors committed on Monday, the 15th of April, to spend more than 2 billion euro in humanitarian support in Sudan, 900 million euro of which will come from the EU and its member states, and better coordinate efforts to secure a sustainable ceasefire. So there's another 2 billion euro coming out of effectively our coffers into securing a possible ceasefire in Sudan. And what they say is here, Mats, they call for the war not to be forgotten. They're not calling for the war to end. They're calling for the war not to be forgotten because they have 2 billion burning a hole in their money that they want to chuck into Sudan. And any money that's thrown in Africa, believe me, it goes down the toilet faster than you can say number two.
Well, perhaps I'm a bit hopeful because I know that the RSF leadership expressed a willingness for a ceasefire. So at least there is a possibility of a much needed ceasefire in Sudan. And once again, there are opportunities to be had in Sudan. Obviously, the weapons that these people are fighting with are delivered from somewhere. Perhaps they're just repackaged in Ukraine and sent down to Sudan. It's a possibility that
Zelensky's trafficking the weapons from Ukraine down into Sudan.
It's been known to happen. Yeah.
I get the point about the RSF are willing to engage in. I get that. But you need both sides to party in this one. And where there's $2 billion worth of Western influence going into Sudan, bearing in mind our earlier conversation where we said they prefer a slow fizzle rather than a hot explosion here, it's not in the warmongers' best interests to have peace in Sudan. So therefore, they're dangling this card of hope of peace in front of people, which is great. I hope they do have a peaceful resolution to this and they hope they have it soon. But let's be honest, how many of your friends or associates are even aware that there's a war happening in Sudan, let alone who's fighting in it and the amount of European money that's being pumped in over there hand over fist? So that's why I had a wry smile, Mats, when it says there's a call for the war not to be forgotten. The headline is, don't forget about this war. It's not like, let's move heaven and earth to get peace in that region. Let's not forget about it. Let's keep the cash flowing in there. So there, it's a crazy old world we live in, my friend. And yeah, a bit of bringing it all around, a little bit of entombed now and then is a nice release from all of that.
Yes, it is. And like you said, it's a small investment in diplomacy might get you quite far. But then again, is it really diplomacy and de-escalation what the system or what the nations within the Western world want right now? I don't think so. I mean, the intermediate range nuclear forces agreement ended, and then you had the test ban on nuclear weapons ended. It's that everyone is ramping up, trying to create a pretext for war. And my fear is that someone wants a war, just like they wanted to take care of Germany back in 1914. The people within the city of London and Washington, D.C. want to take care of Russia and or take care of China in a way that's going to end with a catastrophe, because both Russia and China today are quite able to say enough is enough. And right now, Russia and China are governed by quite sane forces, because both Putin and Xi know that a war is going to destroy their countries as well. But once Putin and Xi leave, there might be replaced by politicians who want a confrontation, who have grown tired of the Western constant provocations. And then we're stuck with a war that nobody really wants, and that's why diplomacy is so much easier. Like it was said before, Georgia is better than war. And I don't know what happened to diplomacy. The United Nations Secretary General Guterres, where is he? Where that man should be on a plane. He should be constantly shuttling between Moscow, Paris, London, Washington, Tel Aviv, Tehran, Ankara. He is the one man who has the possibility to sit on a plane and go to all these places to try and broker ceasefires. But he's doing absolutely nothing, which is sad. Really, really sad. I mean, imagine Hammarskjöld at this time sitting in New York doing nothing. Of course he wouldn't be doing nothing. He would be on the plane moving around trying to make peace. And if he were successful in trying to make peace, he would obviously be assassinated by the CIA and the MI6. But that's a whole different matter. That's another show.
Yeah, that'll keep for the next one. Let's make a note down and we can pick up where we left off in this conversation the next time we speak. Matt, listen, it's been an absolute blast talking to you. It was quite a cathartic session this morning, and it was nice to be able to mix in a little bit of music to it, because that's what I like to do sometimes. It preserves my sanity, my friend, because when you're immersing yourself in this quagmire of filth and depravity on the daily, it can get a little bit overwhelming. So it's always nice to chew the fat with yourself. You're a calm kind of a guy. I'm a little bit hyper this morning. I've had my caffeine. So you're balancing me out quite beautifully today. And I appreciate you for that, Mr. Mats Nielsen. Follow him on X or Twitter at Matsy Nielsen, MazzeNilsson on X or Twitter. We'll stay in touch, my friend, and hopefully talk again sooner rather than later. I'll be back after this short break with none other than Basil Valentine to take us up to the top of the hour here on TNT, today's news talk.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So, if you're travelling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, it's been quite the show this morning. Just want to acknowledge all the lovely comments in the live chat this morning. Somebody having a pop at me in the live chat as well. I think it's important to address that one. Danny says, Rick doesn't live in an area where house prices have doubled since 2011. How do you know that? How do you know where I live? You don't know jack shit. And he also says, I have lots of time to grow vegetables because I only work 2 hours a day. And that's factually incorrect as well. I actually only work probably 1 hour a day because I have guests on during those 2 hours. We'll have news breaks. So if you actually distill it all down, Danny, you're doing me a great service there by saying I work 2 hours a day. It's probably only at 1 hour, maybe even 50 minutes by the time you take out the guests and the news commentaries and the wonderful people like Basil Valentine on there. So come on, man, get your facts right if you're going to have a go at the monitor here this morning. But anyway, on that positive note, Basil, welcome. I must say, you're looking very snappy and suave this morning. You've got yourself a haircut. It looks good. I just thought I'll pay you a compliment to get the ball rolling. What do you think?
Thank you, Ray. It's amazing what a haircut can do for a man. 20 minutes pampering in the barber's chair and you come out looking 20 years younger.
There you go.
Excellent value for money.
Excellent value for money. And on that, you know, let's keep it upbeat. Well, I was going to say let's keep it upbeat and positive, but we've got to talk about breaking news stories, and some of them coming out are pretty grim, especially when it comes to the UK. What have we got on the table today, Basil?
Well, other than my even more urbane appearance, The Guardian are running this morning with a story of the UK facing food shortages once again and price rises as a result of extreme weather linked to climate breakdown. You see, the climate is breaking down. Who knew? You certainly wouldn't think so from the UK, where we've had a typically cool and windy early spring, shall we say. But record rainfall in many parts of the UK means farmers have been unable to plant crops such as potatoes, wheat and vegetables during the key spring season. crops that have been planted are of poor quality, with some rotting in the ground. The persistent wet weather has also meant a high mortality rate for lambs on the UK hills, while some dairy cows have been unable to be turned out onto grass, meaning they will produce less milk. Well, that all sounds plausible enough. Very sad to hear about the lambs, and it has been a particularly wet spring. Whether that's linked to climate breakdown or not, and whether we need to be as alarmist as The Guardian is being, is a moot point, Rick.
So this food shortage is business, okay? You know, I remember a few years ago, I was stocking up feverishly on salt and pasta and sugar and rice in particular. And in the benefit of hindsight, I did well because the prices of all those things went up through the roof. I bought myself about 2 years worth of supply at the time, so I was still eating my way through it until about 6 months ago. It can be a savvy move to stock up on non-perishable items. But in terms of an actual food shortage, we haven't really seen one as yet in the UK proper, but that's not to say that one couldn't be on the way. And of course, if the supply and demand gets skewed, even if the food is there, Basil, we could see massive increases in the prices of basic items at the supermarket, which would not be a welcome move for most people who are struggling to make ends meet at the minute.
I mean, I remember during the so-called pandemic when there was a rush on buying pasta and things. Everybody thought the balloon was going to go up. The supermarkets at the time said that they could not envisage a scenario in which they would run out of pasta. In other words, they had so much pasta in their warehouses that regardless of how much of it we bought and ate, they were never going to run out, which is worth bearing in mind. The world is capable of producing far more food than we need. Prices have been stabilizing after a sharp rise following the COVID farrago. If you want to see what a food shortage looks like, go to Gaza. That's a food shortage. Yeah. The idea that there's going to be an actual, you know, we're going to go into Tesco's or Co-op and find there's nothing on the shelves is ludicrous. Worth remembering that something like a quarter of all the food produced in the UK is wasted. You can go to any supermarket at 7 p.m. in this evening and see huge amounts of food rotting, starting to rot in the remaindered section, available to be bought cheap. You know, prices might go up a bit. I very much feel for the farmers for the wet spring, having been unable to plant as usual. I don't want to appear to be making light of that, but the idea that somehow we're going to face shortages of food, you know, we're hungry, Rick, there's nothing to eat, you know, that's not going to happen. And the idea that it's linked to climate breakdown as well is alarmist and over the top. But something that they're a shortage they're actively trying to engineer, Rick, who'd have thought it, is a shortage of tobacco. The House of Commons is today debating a lifetime smoking ban for youngsters, with conservative libertarians being slammed by a minister describing her regret at starting smoking at the age of 12. The Minister for Victims and Safeguarding, who knew, Rick? Laura Ferris, 45, said she was glad her two young children would never be able to buy tobacco legally under the legislation, which comes before a free vote at its first hurdle in the Commons later today. I don't know about you, Rick. I started smoking at the age of 10. It's not something I'm particularly proud of, and I've stopped now. Perhaps it will claim me in the years to come. But I think the idea of banning it altogether,
The ban, though, is it not for, there's a cutoff point. So it's like, okay, kids up to a certain age will never be able to indulge in tobacco, but your mum and dad can still do it, or your granny can still do it because they missed the cutoff point. So it's a little bit daft. And I know that was what was proposed in New Zealand. They were one of the first places to propose this under Jacinda Ardern, to say that if you're born after a certain date, that you'll never legally be able to purchase tobacco. But if you were born before that date, you can still smoke away until your heart's content. It reminds me a little bit of remember in airplanes, Basil, back in the heady days, the golden days of air travel, used to be smoking allowed on airplanes. And the only thing to separate the smoking department for the compartment from the non-smoking was a flimsy curtain. And every time the air hostess used to come through there with her, her trolley full of drinks or his trolley full of drinks, the tobacco used to waft all the way down the plane. It seemed a bit of a nonsense to have a smoking and a non-smoking department because, quite frankly, there was no actual differentiation between the two. It was just to give an illusion that there was a segregation. But in reality, if you're going to impose a ban on smoking, it has to apply to everybody. It can't just, and I don't think there should be one, by the way, but what I'm saying is it should apply to everybody. There shouldn't be a cutoff age point or a date in the calendar that if you're born after that date, you can indulge, but if you're born, or you can't indulge if you're born before that, you can.
It's extraordinary, Rick, how far and how fast opposition to tobacco smoking has gone in just over 20 years. I think it was 2006 that the indoor smoking ban was introduced. At the time, we all thought that was unbelievably draconian. It seems incredible almost now to think, I can remember smoking on underground trains on the London Underground prior to the King's Cross fire. I can remember smoking on aeroplanes, no problem, smoking at the back, further, you know, window or aisle seat, smoking or non-smoking. But that was a long time ago now. Whether we need to go as far as banning it entirely, for me, it's far too much the nanny state. The Labour Party, needless to say, want to do it. One of the reasons they're citing is it will save the NHS £17 billion a year, apparently. But tobacco also, you know, for all its faults, which are legion, there is no doubt. People sometimes find a cigarette reassuring, believe it or not. Smoking is particularly popular amongst people with mental health problems. Mm-hmm. They find it reassuring now, but, you know, perhaps an alternative could be found or something. And of course, in Native American culture, it has a sacred purpose. Tobacco has, dare I say, almost sort of spiritual properties consumed in ceremony. For me, this is a step too far. Far fewer people smoke these days than they used to. We now have all this steamed tobacco, this vaping going on. You know, personally, I think that's every bit as bad, if not worse. I think smoking will largely die out of its own accord. This kind of excessive nanny state meddling. It's bizarre as well, isn't it, that people talk about legalizing cannabis, which can have very damaging long-term psychological effects. Banning smoking, which, although it's very bad for the lungs, obviously doesn't actually send you into any kind of psychoactively enhanced state, should we say.
I can just feel the vibes of all the potheads out there losing their mind at what you've just said. What? How can you say that? Smoking's much more detrimental. I think the bottom line is here with this one, you know, it's your body, you know the risks of whatever you're going to put in it. And if it helps you to get through the day, we'll then crack on and fill your boots with it. It's a strange one. Just one last headline here. I have to do this one just to close off the show, Basil, when I got a couple of minutes left, just to highlight the madness or the rhetoric that's being used with some news outlets this morning. So this was a message that came out from Birmingham Live, birminghammail.co.uk. UK set to roast with 20 degrees Celsius temperature jump, and two English countries showing to be the hottest. Temperatures look set to rocket by 20 degrees Celsius in just days as glorious sunshine returns up and down the country. So it's not 20 degrees Celsius, it's a 20 degrees Celsius jump. But given that yesterday, where I live, with wind chill, it was about -1 because there was a little flurry of snow coming. A jump of 20 degrees Celsius still puts it as 19 to 20 degrees C. Hardly anything to be getting into a lather about, is it?
It's like the food shortages story. You know, it's sort of climate alarmism has to be ramped up periodically. We all have to get terribly excited about, you know, how the weather is vastly different from what it was 5, 10 or 20 years ago. And this is another example of it. You know, we'll be in the second half. Well, we are in the second half of April, soon to be May. May has traditionally produced some of the hottest days of the year in the United Kingdom. because it's only a month away from the longest day. So if it starts warming up a bit, that's perfectly normal. And I very much doubt it'll go anything like as hot as they are claiming. Very quickly, we've got 10 seconds left. One good news story. Leisure centres are scrapping biometric data systems to keep tabs on staff after a clampdown from the watchdog. Dozens of companies, including national leisure centre chains, are reviewing pulling facial recognition technology. A win for sanity and liberty, Rick.
Yeah, let's hope other places follow suit. Let's hope Tesco, Sainsbury's, Aldi and all those other nasty places drop the same thing. Somehow I don't think it's going to happen at the tills and in through the doors and in the car parks and everywhere else. Too much surveillance, Basil. Thank you so much for all your input this morning. We'll talk again tomorrow and I'll be back after the news with more on TNT Today's News Talk.